This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Ooh. All right, what are we thinking?
Shall I do a Homeric cold open?
Oh, yeah, do.
Okay.
The young podcast host opens up her microphone, switches it on. I mentioned Greek, I don't know much about these things. A friendly skeleton looms in out of the darkness and offers her a boon of a cold open. Will she accept?
In the name of Olympus, I will accept.
Welcome to the Electronic Wireless Show.
To this season 3 episode 18 of the Electronic Wireless Show, Robert Pishotkin's PC Going podcast, and the only podcast you need, in my opinion. My name is Alice Bell, and I'm joined this week by Nate Crowley,
aka Homer, and
aka Homer, aka you can't resist Anthony Hopkins.
It's like a mimetic virus.
So all roads lead to Rome and Anthony Hopkins.
We are, of course, circling around Hades 2.
Yeah, because it come out this weekend, sort of not entirely a surprise launch, because we'd had the beta build, kind of the pre-launch version to have a little test of, a little play of, and things like that, and we got the review build, but they didn't say when it was going to be out, I don't think, so. It was nice to see that dropped this weekend, and we've all been having a little play of it.
Supposedly early access, but my gosh, it doesn't feel it, does it?
No, one wonders. What, I mean, I haven't played as much as you even. Maybe there's
It doesn't feel like much is missing. Maybe some little bits of art in some places, but it's good. It's a hefty pudding. As it stands.
It is, yeah. What do you want to give a little, an elevator pitch? What's the ancient Greek version of an elevator?
Don't know, actually. They had those, it's a deus ex machina, isn't it? Because they used to have the gods in plays on little machines that would lower them down.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess it's just a machina. This is my machina pitch.
Yeah.
So it's mechanically, but if you have played Hades, there is nothing so new that you won't slip immediately into it. The setting is quite changed. You are a witch now, drawn in the same wistfully horny style as everything else in the game. There's lots of sickle blades and crescent-shaped things and silver. And you have a boss witch, Hecate, who's running the Crossroads, which is a kind of a guerrilla encampment in a war against Kronos, the Titan of Time. Because it's that thing, what can happen in stories about Greek mythology where the Titans have burst out of prison and are waging war on Olympus. So it's that setup. And yeah, you're this young witch. I think you are... Are you a granddaughter or a daughter of Hades? And thus are you... What's your relation to Zagreus?
So you're Zagreus' sister or half-sister, I think, yeah. Melinoe. And I asked my classicist brother about her. Because he loved the first Hades, but he's like a very normal gamer. So like he doesn't He plays the games he likes, and he'll see when a new one's out, when it comes out, and he doesn't read specialist press that tells him why he shouldn't like the games he likes. So,
interesting. So what's his take on this?
He didn't know it was out, or that it was happening until I took... Sort of like how you, a couple of weeks ago, were like, Hades 2! And so he was very excited. He's very happy that Apollo is in this one because Apollo is his favourite. And he said that Apollo was literally snubbed in the first game. and yeah, he says, from what he remembers, Milinoe is not a big hitter. Or she's quite a late addition to the mythology, and she's not in any of the big hitter myths and stuff. She's
the Scrappy-Doo of the underworld.
Yes. She's sort of a... I think there's some stuff about her that is potentially a spoiler, depending if they go into it. But she's a... He says, for all he remembers, sort of in the myths, a cross between Hecate and Morpheus. So she's sort of an underworld nymph who brings nightmares. That's kind of her job. But he did say, I think, like, there's some discussion as to whether, like, she's just kind of an aspect of Hecate rather than being her own thing, you know.
But, interesting.
Yeah. So interesting. There's not a lot of, like, I would have liked a bit of nightmare vibe, maybe, and to bring those sort of powers into being her. Well, I think that's quite fun.
One of the power-ups you can get from Selene, who is the moon incarnate, and I think also a sister of...
Well, that I'm not sure if she's saying sister literally or in the way that witches call each other sister, you know.
Right. Yeah. But one of the power ups does turn you into a living nightmare. Which is very cool. And yeah, so I think it is going along those lines. I like her wobbly arm, which is like a Ghostbusters arm.
Yeah.
Have you seen?
I have seen the Ghostbusters arm. I do like it.
And I like the traffic control game, where you guide spirits back to the crossroads with arm gestures. That's really good. And I love how you can press T to confide in a frog every time you die.
I thought you'd like the frog, yes.
I adore the frog. It's really good. I think it's a white tree frog.
Yes. So there's as you've alluded to, there's a resource gathering element to this because you can do spells in a big cauldron, so you need to like get bits from when you're out and about, and you can only take one tool with you at a time. So if you think like, oh, I need silver, you can take the pickaxe, and if you need seeds to grow into plants back at the crossroads, you can take a spade.
Is that what that's for?
Yeah
That's good.
Loads of cool little bits. I've only unlocked the two knives so far, which I like. The two sort of short blades, and then you can have a staff as well, which is a bit more long range.
And I've got the axe, which is it's like as big as her. She looks adorable dragging it around. And then there's the umbral torches, which are like rave sticks. They're pretty cool.
Yeah, my brother got them because he's been playing it loads more than me over the weekend. He texted me last night saying, I just got the flame sticks. And then a few moments later was like, they're shit.
I am finding it like trickier than Hades. I don't want to say harder because my progression's been okay and I've not felt stumped, but definitely trickier. Like there's this whole business with like casting magic in a big circle that I am just not comfortable with yet. It still feels like I'm trying to work out what it does.
There's a
lot you can do, and I'm not feeling like I'm fluent in it yet by any means.
I feel like Milinoe is, she's, I'm probably saying her name wrong, Milinoe, I don't know. She's more of a crowd control character.
Mm.
So she has spells. You have magic as a resource, and you can press and hold any of your attacks or your casts to make them more powerful and use up more magic. So she's got the area of attack, or the area of effect spell that Nate's talking about will stop enemies if they're caught in it. but if you press and hold, it does damage. But it's a real, like, you can press it once, like, just tap it, and it will do a little bip and freeze people. But the pressing and holding is a bit more of a risk analysis.
Because it's a ball, cause like, because you can't stop moving for a second. Though in classic Hades style, it has done a good job of, like, constantly keeping me on the edge of my comfort zone, because there's always a reason to do the thing. Well, if you're given a choice of boons that only affect your fiddly casts, you're going to kind of have to go with fiddly casts, and I like that.
Yeah, yeah. I will say, I'm going to pull up something. I think it's less wistfully horny than Hades. I think it's a less horny game somehow.
Yes, you're correct. I can't quite disentangle that from the art style. But certainly the tone does feel different this time round.
I was trying to think about it. I think it's because when you have a character who's like a bored private school kind of posho, they always sort of feel like they're on the prowl. So maybe Zagreus had a sort of top-down vibe effect on the first game. But I don't know. This one feels like a bit more, I don't know, like a little bit more cute with like the frog and like your little ghost. There's a little ghost that lives in your tent who's practicing
being
scary. And the
spider. I love Ariadne the spider.
Arachne.
Is it? I mean, obviously it's arachnids, but...
No, it's Ariadne. Yeah, she got turned into a spider because she was too good at weaving.
Well, she's great, and she's just hanging out making dresses, which look really cool. But because the camera's so zoomed out, I don't think you can appreciate them.
No, agreed. Yeah.
But that's cool. I really like that you could just go get a new dress from a spider.
Yeah.
And it's also what I also really like is, like, the silk dresses are massively armored. So, like, if you want to play as a tank, you just get lovely dresses.
That's good. Yeah. It's a very, I think, like the first one, it's a very approachable kind of a roguelike, you know, like it's...
Well, it's can pretty much ignore 80% of what's going on and still get fun out of it. Like,
yeah,
the dialogue's all great, but if you want to bash through it, you're not going to miss anything that you're going to be penalized for. And there are so many mechanics in play, you know, you can pretty much just go on vibes. If you don't want to think too hard about the upgrades you're getting. And I think, if anything, it does that better than the first. Like, you can really just flow through a few runs without being too invested, which is a great thing to be able to do in a game like that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that kind of pick up, put down kind of vibe.
Drop in, drop out, tune in, zone out. What was the 60s thing?
Turn on, tune in, drop out.
Yeah. That's it.
I love that. But yeah, brilliant game. It's done well out of the gate. It's done, I think, better than the first game did, which makes sense because the people didn't know that they were going to love Hades. And now if you did love Hades, you know, I'm just going to get Hades too, right? It's also tested by Jams. It's, he says, another Steam Deck banger.
Hey.
Which is good.
But it hasn't all been No, I can't do the segue. I can't do that. Do you know what? I've been defeated by my boss switch here. I couldn't do it.
What
I was
going to
try and talk about Helldivers 2.
You're segueing way too early.
Yeah, this is it. Banish me back to the underworld.
What would your ironical punishment be for the crime of segueing too early?
Oh, it would be to wander in an endless series of, like, you know, like a labyrinth sort of dungeon, but always to think I was in the next room and, like, reach to pick things out of a chest, only to find I'm actually just scrabbling in the dirt in another
room. I was going to say, you'd be at, like, a party with a lot of cool people, and every time you tried to enter a conversation, it would sort of fall flat and...
It would segue away from what I was trying to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. But he says, it fits the dinky PC so well, you'd have thought Supergiant had decided to make this roguelike sequel a Steam Deck game that just happened to run on desktops by accident. which is an interesting one, because I don't know if I would have assumed the controls would...
Have you been playing on a controller thus far?
I have, yeah. I just find it easier.
I thought I did, but then I thought I would just try with mouse and keyboard. And for stuff like aiming the casts, like if you get the Zeus upgrades on the casts, which mean you're putting your circle elsewhere other than around you, that's damn hard on a console, actually, on a controller.
Mm. That's fair.
But then I presume they designed for controller, so maybe that's just a one-off.
Maybe. Another thing I'd like to mention before you try and segue again is... Brendy has written a fun little post about Nemesis, which I think is another fun... She's a great addition to the game.
Oh, yeah. Because she has... I thought it was just like occasional challenges, like with the death guy in Hades. But then she'll do stuff like be at Charon's shop before you and buy the stuff you want.
So Nemesis is a character who's initially hanging out at the crossroads, and she is the personification of vengeance. So she's cross that you have been chosen to try and defeat Kronos instead. And she thus sometimes will go on a run through the dungeon at the same time as you. And sometimes you'll run into her and she'll be like, whoever kills the most baddies fastest wins, and then you'll lose all your coin to her if you lose. She'll try and bogart boons first as well, like she'll run through a door quicker than you sometimes. You can beat her as well, but yeah. And yeah, she'll turn up at the shop and fucking buy stuff before you, like if you wanted that juicy pomegranate. Then
she's great. I'd be giving her all the heaven wine that I find, been simping hard.
Have you? Because Brandy said he tried and she refused.
Yeah. I keep trying. she gives it back because she's all, you know, duty. But no.
Yeah. No, it's good. And I suppose it's if you have not played Hades, yeah, it's a roguelike and you go through different dungeons, limited health, don't get a chance to really heal between runs unless you run into different boons, and you get boons from the gods of Olympus. So each run maybe you'll have a different power up from a different god. Zeus will add lightning effects, sometimes Apollo will turn up, he does good damage buffing stuff as well. There are fiddly ones like Nate said that will just affect just your magic attacks or things like that. Saluna has a great one that helped me get past the first boss, which if you use enough magic you can then activate a heal, which is great. Really satisfying loop in Hades.
And actually, yeah, for people who haven't played either game, worth mentioning, the environments are just absolutely beautiful. Erebus is the sort of first underworld realm, and it's all sort of thickets full of spiderwebs and swamps with little sad faces bubbling up in them. Like I love the environmental artwork, and then it gets even better for the second tier down, which is Oceanus. It just looks so cold and humid and Atlantic and like a shit old sea life center. I fucking love it.
Yeah, that's a great shout. Yeah, and I hate you have to progress to the next level by like jumping down a drain, basically. It's fucking horrible.
Have you beat the band?
No.
I cannot beat the band. That's where I'm... Yeah.
Is it a band
the
of Scylla frogs?
And the, Scylla and the Sirens.
Oh, that's fun.
But they're like a J-pop band. Like, it's difficult. I won't ruin it anymore. It's very good.
No, it is very good. And well worth a go. It's out now. And you can get it, you can play it, you can have a great time. What else have you been having a great time playing this week, Nick?
Been doing a bit more of the Battlegrounds duos with the Hearthstone. What else did I was playing something else? Did some more RimWorld, getting to grips with that. And thought about Manor Lords, although yeah, I think I'm probably just gonna have to play it. James seemed very enthusiastic on that.
I think you'd like it, yeah. It's got like nice. It's I think similar to Ostrov that Sin used to write about loads. It's very nice, like kind of slow pace of life, like farming and, you know, that sort of RTS.
I'm
rather than
very intrigued by the idea of your villagers trading resources between each other. Like the idea of internal economies within a static 4x resource pool. There's something really appealing about that. I don't know what it would actually do in practice. It might just be very satisfying as an aesthetic thing. But yeah, certainly looks like I've got to get around to it.
Did you want to talk about Helldivers 2?
I'm just intrigued to see what's happened, because I was kind of more hoping to leech some news from you, because I'd seen there'd been a big upset because of the PSN thing, and I didn't know whether it had been resolved or...
It has been resolved, yeah. Okay. So it was a whirlwind romance. it was announced that PC players had to link a PlayStation Network account for, like, PlayStation, like, Sony security reasons. I don't fucking really know why.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to dodge explaining.
It's a PC gaming website. I don't have to care about Sony. It was some sort of security reason, but you had to link a PlayStation Network account even if you weren't playing on PlayStation, or you wouldn't be able to play the game. Everyone was upset about this. So it got review bombed mightily, and player counts went down over the weekend. They reversed the decision, it's picked up again, and the players launched what they called Operation Cleanup to reverse their bad review scores back to being good. There was a little bit of kerfuffle around it. I think some community manager may have got in trouble for encouraging the review bombing. The head of Arrowhead Games said something. I can't remember. He said he was like on the player's side and totally got it. And some people were like, well, you know, you're working with Sony. I don't know hugely.
Is Joel unharmed?
Joel is unharmed as far as we know, yeah. And
good.
The other thing is I can't remember his name, but he joked about making a cloak, because you wear cloaks. You can wear cloaks in the game. They joked about making
they're so good.
Yeah, he joked about making a cloak that had a design on it that showed the review bomb lines going down and then up again. But yeah, that's all resolved now. Everyone's just playing Helldivers 2 again.
It's fine. Good.
Yeah, all sorted, I guess.
That's why I should have segued in the first place. That's a nothing burger.
Yeah, nothing
fine
to see here. Well, I suppose there's something to see in terms of like thinking about, I don't know, player pressure movements and things. Do you remember? I don't know. Like, sometimes it's for good. I get that this was an unreasonable kind of thing. But then, like, players didn't like the end of Mass Effect 3 and, like, made BioWare change it because they didn't like it. But, like... I don't know. I know that's an old beef, but like video games aren't, you know, there's no other medium where you can just like make Steven Spielberg like patch the end of a film in because he didn't like the original, you know? But that's a whole different discussion. But we're supposed to be talking about games we've been playing. I've been playing, and I think I could talk about this now because the embargo should be up by the time this podcast is out, but I've been playing a game called Crow Country, which is a sort of baby's first Resident Evil. It's like a love letter to Resi and survival horrors, but kind of has the vibe of like if that was made out of like Duplo or like Playmobil.
Okay.
You know, like it's chunkier and it's kind of maybe easier, not as threatening, but still
a non-threatening visual grammar, right?
It's not non-threatening. I shouldn't say that. But basically, it's set in like I think 1990, I think, literally set in 1990, and you play a special agent called Mara, who has been sent to this abandoned theme park called Crow Country, which was suddenly shut down by Edward Crow 2 years previously. Nobody knew why, there was no warning, it was just shut down, and now Edward Crow has gone missing, so you've turned up at the park to try and find him, and sinister things are afoot. It's a very spooky vibe. It's a very well-observed kind of regional, independently owned theme park. You know, like it's all crow-themed and like there's like different areas. There's a fairy forest. There's an uncompleted futuristic zone. There's a Halloween town bit, you know. It's very kind of well done.
Does this dip into haunted animatronics territory?
A little bit, but it's more Resident Evil zombie territory. and
it's a good thing.
The game's story like unfolds out of order, so you sort of see, you pick up different newspapers and find different staff memos of stuff going wrong, and you sort of start piecing together what's happened. It's very good. It's very kind of mysterious and cool. It's, the focus is more, I think, on the puzzles and the weird, you know, like in Resident Evil, you have to find different things to open doors and all this kind of shit.
Yeah.
It's more, the emphasis is more on that than the survival horror bit. Because it's quite easy to survive. You do get increasing numbers of monsters, like little flesh lumps or like pools of goo that have big tombstone yellow teeth and staring eyes, or like a pool table that explodes and the big monsters under it, big spindly legged men, or like just big brutes that hold cannons and stuff. But,
that classic cryptid.
Yeah. But they move quite slowly, so you can avoid them. I would say it's better to like prune a few of them out, you know, when you go through an area, because they will multiply, and the more of them there are, the harder they are to avoid, and you have only got a little bit of health. But they're quite easy to avoid, and you also kind of never run out, or at least, you know, from my kind of experience of it, you never really run out of ammo or health stuff, because it's quite plentiful, and as long as you're careful, there's not really that sense of threat. It's more like just the vibes are kind of cool and creepy, you know?
Actually, a game I didn't play this week, but I came across recently that was, I would not in any way recommend, but this is kind of reminding me of it. Have you come across Fossil Fuel or Fossil Fuel 2?
No.
Okay, so this is a really weird situation where, you know, I've talked before about how there's a strange lack of good dinosaur games.
Yeah.
Like, people who are really into dinosaurs just feel there aren't enough dinosaur games out there. And this leads to some really shitty dinosaur games getting made that nonetheless become quite celebrated within like dinosaur fan communities,
yeah,
just because there's something. Fossil Fuel 2, I think it came out this year, but it's certainly worth a look at. If you ever remember, this is going way back, something built out of a Half-Life mod called Gunman Chronicles from like 1999.
Oh my god, 1998. Okay.
I know Graham was familiar with it, because we talked about it once.
Yeah, he's an old like man,
it was like a shitty Half-Life mob with dinosaurs and space cowboys. And Fossil Fuel 2 manages to be that 25 years later. one of the final bosses is called Robo-Rex. It is a cyborg T-Rex that moves with about 8 frames of animation. So stuff tries really hard to be retro a lot of the time and feels very polished but falls short on the vibes. Fossil Fuel 2, if you are somehow missing janky dinosaur antagonist vibes from the late 90s, is really worth your time. That's the recommendation I didn't think I would give today.
Okay, all right. I think Crow Country gets the vibes right. It looks like you're playing a VHS. It's got that kind of right amount of visual noise. It's very kind of well observed. It'll wink at the camera and kind of break the fourth wall a little bit sometimes as well. It's a good, like, well observed kind of love letter to the genre, but the emphasis is more on the puzzles rather than the survival. So I think if you want like a true survival horror where you're kind of on the edge of your seat and, you know, I've only got 3 bullets left, every shot counts kind of thing, this isn't the game for you, but I do think it's a good game. And
when you say it's like a resi homage, has it got the fixed camera angles from the really early games, or is it?
No, you've got a rotating camera, but it's third person kind of janky shooting. You know, the controls are a bit sort of adorable.
So do any dogs leap out of windows unexpectedly?
No. I don't think so. I'm trying to remember now. I'm pretty sure. There are like holes in the walls that as you go along and stuff gets more dangerous, worms kind of leap out of the walls unexpectedly and try and grab you.
I'd love to hear Matthew's thoughts on the architect of this place.
Yeah. This does actually, it kind of makes a bit more sense because it, you know, you're trying to get into like the service tunnels for the staff. So it sort of makes sense that they'd be locked and stuff. Some of them don't make sense. It's good. It's fun. I liked it a lot. So that's kind of the main thing I've been playing this week. Apart from Hades, obviously. Been playing a lot of Hades.
Yeah. I've been really wanting a game to stick for a while, so I'm very glad Hades has come around, because it's just very compelling, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, also, I played a demo of Vampire Therapist. Talk about that? So, Vampire Therapist, I mean, it does what it says on the tin, sort of twice as well, because, like, you're a vampire who is a therapist, and you are giving therapy to other vampires, which is quite fun. And I was a bit concerned about, like, what's this game kind of going to be? Because it was like, it uses real therapy techniques and stuff. And, you know, I was like, how is this going to work? How, you know, kind of how is it going to be written? And how well observed is it going to be? And the developer got in touch, did a little interview with him, because it's a mostly solo project. So we chatted about that, and he talked about those, you know, how it's going to work. And now the kind of preview builds out, and it's the first kind of case you deal with. And I like it. I think it's got like some good potential, and like I think the world is quite interesting. And like, yeah, it's.
So I'm trying to think. I'm imagining, like, my gut has imagined this game having like kind of lo-fi cutesy vampires, almost like the Count from Sesame Street.
Yes and no. There is, so like the first. You talk to this guy called Andromachus, who's like a really like old vampire, sort of Vlad the Impaler type, and he talks about like all the terrible things he's done in the past, you know, and how like he had to get over doing that. So they're not like super cutesy. It's more like visual novel-y. But
it sounds quite What We Do in the Shadows from that.
He
sounds
did
like
say
Nandor the Relentless.
Kind of, yeah, one of his inspirations, you know, and the first case you deal with is like a scientist who's like a doctor. He's trying to work on like some basically fake synthetic blood so that they don't have to kill people and things, and he's very uptight and very tightly wound, and he says horrible things about himself and like all this kind of stuff. I think the way it's done is decent. I'd be interested to have, like, you know, someone with more experience of CBT kind of, because I've only done CBT once before and I didn't find it super helpful for me, but I don't think it's implemented in like a very preachy way.
I'd be really interested to play this, actually. Yeah,
so I'd be interested in other people's opinions on it, but I thought the preview was decent, and it's got good fun voice acting in it as well.
Bloody love Dracula's.
Who doesn't love Dracula's? Now, Nate, we don't have a hardware section this week.
No, should we make up some stuff?
But I mean,
what? I hear Computers 2 are coming.
Computers 2?
Yeah.
Shit, son.
This time they can think and feel.
Oh no.
Yeah, they're made out of all normal computer stuff and also wood.
Wait,
it's
what?
Been the missing ingredient all this time.
Oh, okay, right.
They're keeping them very secret. I know they sent one to James, but you can only use it for a minute a day. So,
because it feels pain.
That's it. Yeah, it gets tired.
Gets tired.
I'm not sure it's the technological leap they're hoping for.
I do, like, I've said this before, but I don't really use Siri very much, but I always try to be very polite when I use things like that. Because I just feel like the stuff we put computers through.
Yeah. It is tiring.
In a Terminator situation, if Skynet ever does come online, we deserve it, you know.
Well, imagine if someone forced you into a box and made you do maths non-stop for hours.
So that people could look at porn of, like, dogs online, you know.
This is it. Let's talk about underworld punishments. Like, that's bad, man. Yeah, no, we don't need computers too. We don't need another hero.
No.
Burn them.
But we have got a tower this week, don't we?
Yeah, we do. So come on up to... Well, no, actually, there's no real classical version of a tower. They were just towers. That's when they were invented.
Yeah.
Yeah, come up to my olden days tower.
It's got all vines on it. What have we got then?
Right, well, welcome to the olden days tower. As you can see, it's a very large gentleman here. This is Hercules. He's pissed, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
Extremely drunk. Yeah, he broke into my store of golden nectar and wolfed it all down. He had a literally Herculean portion, and now he's off the count. Unfortunately, all of his 12 labours need doing. So as our task for today, between the two of us, we've got to suggest characters from, I suppose, just the general epistemological realm of video games to do
right,
these tasks.
Yeah. Okay.
So they can be characters from games, they can be figures from the game industry, they can even be people we know if we're desperate. But yeah, we've got to assign the 12 labours. Are you ready?
I've never been more ready. Yeah.
So first of all, there's a Nemean lion that needs slaying. It's essentially just a very large lion. It's a very, very tough hide.
Yeah, so can't be pierced by conventional weapons, so he strangles it,
correct,
doesn't he?
So, yeah.
Who's a good strangler?
Well, see, my original, I was going to say, well, just Lara Croft, Wildlife Annihilator. But
that's
yeah,
true.
The pistols are of no use. Yeah. So who's got very large hands? Heavy from Team Fortress 2.
Oh, yeah, the Heavy. Yeah, that's very good.
Biggest hands in games, like bin lids.
Yeah, very big hands. So, or like...
Okay.
Gollum from the Lord of the Rings, Gollum. He's got strangler's hands.
Yeah, well, he could ride piggyback on the Heavy, actually.
Mm.
And then you've got a sort of a Goro from Mortal Kombat situation. Oh, actually, Goro from Mortal Kombat. Well, yeah, just send him, Gollum, and the Heavy from Team Fortress 2. Team Stranglehands.
The
it's
Expendables,
done.
Yeah.
There's no choke. Okay. Next, it's slaying the nine-headed... Lernaean Hydra, which lived in a swamp, I believe, and had a caustic or poisonous, a venomous rather bite.
Yeah, see, I was going to go for like a Titanfall mech because it could do a lot of leaping around and be very agile, but I don't know, the swamp might gunk it up.
I'm going to shock you here. I think Joel is the man for this job.
Really?
Well, yeah, because every time he solves a problem, two more spring up in its wake, but he keeps a cool head.
Very good.
And he's dealing with a toxic player base, potentially, as we all are. So, you know, like the Hydra's heads can spit venom.
Okay, yeah.
So I think Joel is a Hercules there.
But he is just a man.
So is Hercules. Well, he's dead.
Well,
literally half a god, yeah.
Okay.
Well, he could phone in if he needs a break.
That's true, okay.
Now, the next task is the Cyrenian Hind, which I believe was a very, very fast deer.
Yes. So I was thinking your man from Red Dead Redemption 2, because he can do that slow down shooty deadeye thing.
Oh, yeah, Arthur Morgan.
Yes, there you go.
And he'd get all sad about it afterwards.
Yeah,
as well.
Exactly. He'd be like, oh, but then he'd skin it and put it on his horse.
Yeah, take a big grisly bite out of it.
Yeah.
Right, the Erymanthian boar, capturing that. And yeah, just a strong pig, really.
I can't remember what the deal is with this pig. It's just a big pig, isn't it?
I believe so. And what bigger pig is there than Roadhog from Overwatch, who also has a hook?
Oh, pig to pig.
This is it, yeah. Boar battler.
Yeah.
A boar blaster.
There you go. We found this... the boar blaster.
He's the blaster of boars. Cleaning the Algian stables in a single day. This is my favourite of the labours. This is carnivorous horses that had been shitting in a stable for like 100 years. No one had even swept up. And then Hercules had to do it.
He does such a fucking taskmaster approach to this one as well, doesn't he? Because it's like clean out the stables, fastest cleaning wins, and he just gets a river to do it.
I mean, to be fair, the man diverts a river.
I mean, yeah.
Quite often you've got to wonder about the effort he's putting into the dodge.
Yeah. But this, I've got clearly power wash simulator.
I was going to say Wilmot from Wilmot's Warehouse. He'd have a decent job at doing it properly.
Towering blocks of shit around. But he wouldn't clean the shit. He'd just like organize the shit.
Yeah. He'd be like armor fragments here, bone slurry here.
Yeah. He's like Wall-E making big cuboid, you know, towers.
But who is the character in Power Wash Simulator?
I mean, I suppose it's sort of an unnamed protagonist. But it's you, but like not you. You're just first person power washing, starting a business.
But I mean, that means you're putting yourself in to clean the Algian stables. But I mean, with a powerful enough hose, maybe that would be fun.
With a power wash. What is a river but not a powerful hose?
Christ's power wash.
Exactly.
Okay, fine. Okay, it's Alice Bell as Power Wash Simulator.
Yeah.
Next, we've got to slay the Stymphalian birds. Do you know the funny thing about these birds, Alice?
Mm.
They are the first example of a cinematic universe crossover, because they were also in the story of Jason and the Argonauts.
Oh! What was their deal? Are they just shithead birds? They're like carnivore birds, aren't they?
They're robots.
Oh, they're not robots, are they?
Yeah, boy, they're robots. And Hercules frightens them off with a rattle. Which I choose to perceive as information warfare. So that's interesting. Who could deal with robot birds or robirds? I think they're robots anyway. I'm just going to Google this.
They're like magic robots, like the little owl in that film. God, what was it called? If we're looking for like a noisemaker... I don't know.
Who's good at rhythm games?
Oh, your man from Hi-Fi Rush?
Yes. What's their name?
He's part robot as well.
Yeah, so he could reason with them if all else failed.
Yeah. I can't remember his name, but he will ne'er see the light of day again, sadly, because Tango Gameworks has been shit-canned.
He can burst birds in eternity.
Yeah. I can't remember his name, but him...
Yeah, okay. James will correct us, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So next he's got to capture the Cretan bull, which again, actually, technically, a bit of an MCU job as well, because it's the Minotaur's dad.
Grim.
Yeah. It's just you don't want to think any further down that line. But no. Yeah, we've got to capture the Minotaur's dad.
Wait, much as when I look at the work of Sherlock Holmes, many of these cases are animal-based, aren't they?
They really are, Alice. Yeah,
almost all, in fact.
It's just essentially a strong man who decides to abduct a farmyard piecemeal.
Yeah. All right. Wrestling a bull. Okay.
So, it's a shame we blow our cowboy early.
Yeah, I mean, you could send in Bayonetta because it's obviously quite a horny bull.
Yeah, by definition. So, does she deal with... She's like the horny crimes unit? Is that her thing?
Kind of, yeah. She's like a big sexy witch whose clothes are made of her own hair and like she has high heel guns.
Is she more ripped than Hecate? That's the thing.
She's not... Well, Hecate's very ripped, isn't she?
It's frighteningly ripped.
Yeah.
Okay, Bayonetta. It's done. Next, we've got Steel. You're not going to believe this. The mares of Diomedes, so horse wrestling.
We're doubling up on horses.
Oh no, well, yeah, this is... Well, I guess one was a horse shit challenge, yeah. And this is the actual horses. What's your man from Katamari Damacy?
Oh, and he's going to create a horse ball?
Yeah, just roll through the stables and kind of job down. I mean, that would clear the shit as well, but not in a pleasant way. Oh, what's their name, though? Because it's the king.
But what's the deal with the mares, though? What's their, like, USP?
I think that it might just be cross. Hang on, let me do a quick...
Angry horses.
Guess what? Man-eating horses. Again.
I mean, come on.
They've really got to think of a new gimmick, haven't they?
Why are all these ancient Greeks out here feeding flesh to their horses?
In the case of the mares of Diomedes... human flesh is what would make them calmer. So they're being given human flesh as an anti-anxiety medication.
It feels like a vicious cycle.
So yeah. Who's got a lot of human flesh that they could give to these horses?
What about the king in Elden Ring that's made of all other people's bits?
Oh, perfect. Yeah, it's like a buffet for them.
Yeah.
Okay, great. We're nearly done now. We've just got the obtaining the girdle of Hippolyta, Queen of the Amazons. So stealing a belt from a lady.
So we want someone that's like a kind of smooth, seductive thief.
Corvo from Dishonored.
Oh yeah, he'd be quite good, wouldn't he?
He's got belt thief written all over him.
He could just blink in and like grab it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then blink out perfect. Again. Pull her pants down. Yeah.
Oh, it's more bloody cattle rustling now. Obtaining the cattle of the three-bodied giant, Geryon. Now, this one really bothers me. What? How can a monster have three bodies? If you've got three bodies, you're just three blokes.
It's like three torsos and one head? What's going on?
Well, yeah, because then with no disrespect to conjoined siblings, I can't imagine him being a very imposing opponent with three bodies conjoined at the head.
No.
I don't know, Geryon. Let's just do a little quick look at Geryon. A fearsome giant, often described as a monster with either three bodies and three heads.
Okay.
Or three heads and one body. Or three bodies and one head. That all sounds very silly to me.
I reckon you could send in Sonic and he could run around very fast and confuse this strange three-body person.
Kind of like, it's the three-body problem.
The original three-body problem, yeah.
Okay. Sonic the Hedgehog, fine. And in fact, his mate Tails has got three tails, so you know.
Yeah, there you go.
Two tails, actually. Labour 11, stealing three of the golden apples of the Hesperides. Just stealing some fruit.
Fruit rustling.
Anti-climax, really.
That seems quite Stardew Valley protagonist-y. They go about stealing fruit.
Yeah, that's true. Or
who else? Who really likes fruit?
Mickey Mouse from 1992's Castle of Illusion collected apples. And he's out of copyright now.
Yeah, or that fucking coyote. What's his name?
Wile E. Coyote?
No, it was a PlayStation game.
Oh, Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah, Coyote.
Yeah.
He collects
fruit. Yeah, Smash Coyote. He can do it.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good. Two retro heroes in a row. And finally... capturing and bringing back Cerberus, the big old dog with three minds. I think this is Geralt from The Witcher.
Geralt from The Witcher? Okay, yeah, I can see that.
It's the most like an actual mission on the list.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have remembered that in Assassin's Creed... Ancient Greece edition, you do go and like fight some ancient Greek monsters, and like there's the Sphinx and the Minotaur and all that kind of shit.
Oh, hang on. What about Zagreus? He's literally Cerberus's best mate.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to fight.
They are. That's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, there you go.
Great stuff. Well, Hercules has sobered up now. I just saw on the Wikipedia for the 12 labours of Hercules, one of Hercules' enemies, Typhon, had a wife called Echidna.
That's a very video game move, isn't it?
I know. She was a half-woman, half-snake monster. And that's all cool, but I wonder, when they invented echidnas, why did they name them after her?
Thank you, Nate, for that mythological piece. You were helping out quite a lot. I appreciate that.
Oh, it was a rip-roarer, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that. And thank you, listener, for joining us for this Season 3, Episode 18 of the Electronic Wireless Show, Rock, Paper, Shotgun's PC Gaming Podcast, and the only podcast you need, in my opinion. And all that remains now is to give some recommendations, because every week we recommend something that is not a video game. So, Nate, what are you recommending this week?
I'm going to recommend the series Reservation Dogs, which there are three series of. You can watch it on Dizzers. It's very good, occasionally very funny, sort of magical realist drama set in Indian Territory in Oklahoma. It's very good. I've got family in that part of the world, and the local detail is insanely well realised. It's got a lot of heart. It's got some great acting. Three series that I finished very comfortably in 1 week. So that's Reservation Dogs.
Lovely. I'm going to recommend a TV show as well. I'm going to recommend The Landscapers, which I think is a couple years old now. It's a dramatisation of this couple who were arrested in, I want to say, 2014, and they're in prison because they were found guilty of killing the woman's parents and burying them. Well, I mean, they did bury her parents in their back garden and then defraud people by collecting all their savings and selling the house and pretending they were still alive and then spending it all on Hollywood memorabilia and getting into fantastic debt. And then they ran away to France. But they were found guilty of murdering the older couple. They dispute that and say they didn't. But they're both in prison now. And this is a dramatisation starring Olivia Colman and David Thewlis. And it's very sympathetic to the pair of them without being saying that they didn't do it. I don't know.
That sounds fascinating. Hollywood memorabilia.
Yeah. So from the point of view of, like, you know, humanising probably a pair of murderers, I don't know how you feel about that. But as just a drama, it's very good. They're both very good actors. The leads are great. It's shot in a very interesting way, some of the scenes as well, and the way it mixes like memories and film and, you know, Hollywood style is very good. And it's got a great supporting cast as well. Daniel Rigby plays the police chief, and he's like a great theatre actor who's done like film stuff as well. It's fantastic, very funny. So yeah, I think it's on just regular telly. I can't remember, it might be Sky, but you can have a look, see if you can find it. The Landscapers.
What's the name of it again?
Landscapers.
The Landscapers.
Yeah, because they buried her parents in the garden and put bushes on top of them.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very good. And it's got David Thewlis in full, like, hangdog, sad face David Thewlis mode, you know?
Do you reckon if him and Bill Murray had a sad off, would outgloom the other?
Thewlis every time, I think, you know. He's just naturally like...
Murray hasn't got the chops. He's a very, very sad-looking man.
Murray's, I think, too naturally genial. He's got like a little twinkle in his eye, you know?
Yeah, no, there is a... Thewlis is an altogether more choleric proposition.
Yeah. Someone posted a photo of Bill Murray who was just standing on their street looking up at the sky, listening to birds or looking at clouds or something, just standing there. It's great.
Oh, it's lovely.
Isn't it? Yeah. Well, lovely. Thank you for your recommendation, Nate, and for joining me to talk about Hades on this episode of the Electronic Wireless Show. You can find Rock, Paper, Shotgun on most of the social medias. I can't remember if one Blue Sky or not as well. I don't know. Whichever one is not dying. I don't know. And the ones that are dying as well. Just search for Rock Paper Shotgun. You can email the podcast at podcast@rockpapershotgun.com. You can join the Discord. The link is in the show notes. You want to hang out, talk about video games. There's also a little room in the Discord to just chat about the podcast, where sometimes Nate pops up and talks about fish and all that kind of jazz. But for all of your PC gaming needs, just go to www.rockpapershotgun.com. And for now, it is goodbye from me, Alice Bell, and it is goodbye from Nate Crowley.
Oh, I'm off to get in a fight with a witch.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.